You're listening to The Lyric Feature on RTE Lyric FM.
On this week's Lyric Feature, writer Sarah Boehm and producer Regan Hutchins visit the nuns at St. Mary's Cistercian Abbey in Glencairn to find out what artists can learn from the monastic way of life. This is Out of the Marvellous.
Whoops, going over speed bumps. I feel like that the speed bumps are there to force us to slow down before we've even arrived. There's no rushing in this place. So we're in St. Mary's Abbey. We're just driving up the long avenue in Glencairn. So what are we doing here? I think what so fascinates me about this community in particular is the kind of importance that they place on prayer and this belief that they have in the power of prayer as being something that's like really vital to the world. And like in my own practice, I guess this is something I think about a lot. I think about like, what's the point of me spending so many hours devoted to this thing, whether it's a book or a visual project or whatever. And you just have to kind of believe in the magic and the mystery of it. And you have to believe that it is important to the world, to a larger community in some way. So I'm really interested in seeing how this community of nuns live, and I suppose exploring how that can be of importance to me on what I'm trying to do. Bibles and
I know this is the old guest house, but it's sparsely furnished, but like
I love the windows. These are original windows.
And what's your view?
It's this lovely orange creeping plant growing all over a stone wall. I have a bit of the church, but then beyond that the driveway, I suppose, and the fields surrounding it and the trees. It actually already feels peaceful here, doesn't it? I don't know, is it just because it's a very quiet guest house, but...
Could you imagine sitting here writing and reading and being contemplative?
I have to be completely honest, there's like a part of me that is waxing lyrical about the peace, but there's another little part of my mind that's panicking. Like, I think if I was here on my own without you to sort of hang around with and talk to, I'd be a little bit afraid of my own mind right now.
First bell rings at 4:10. We drag ourselves out, some more enthusiastically than others, and we go straight to our choir stalls.
Are you ready?
I feel like I've been awake since I went to bed. It was almost like I didn't sleep at all, to be honest.
The first office of the day begins at 4:10 with the ringing of the bells, the chanting, scripture reading.
Vigils, the first prayers of the morning, the earliest ones.
It's 4:05 in the morning.
Arguably still night. I feel a little bad that I insisted on getting up.
We pray for those who cannot sleep. There isn't a life that doesn't have some major trauma in it. And they will wake up at 2:00 and 3:00 and 4:00 and can't get back to sleep. And they're all stirred up inside. There's a, you know, great agitation of one kind or another. My name is Sister Fiacra. I'm Abbess of Glencairn.
Those prayers at 4 a.m. I don't know, is it like a caveman thing? I've heard that adrenaline kicks in, but it also seems to be naturally when the worries of the day and behind and the day to come forth. I think about the nuns in the chapel praying for, people like me stressing about, I guess, regular life stuff. And there is something comforting about it.
And quite frankly, there are mornings when I don't want to get out of my bed at that insane hour, but I'm with those people. I'm in the privileged position of being able to pray for them, because there's a very good chance they can't pray for themselves. They're so agitated. That's what gets me to my choir stall in the morning when I'm not feeling like it.
I do have a similar experience of, if I'm stressed, I'll say out loud the Shade of Ahavrera, because I know it. It calms me down and it connects me to something like Sarah I wouldn't be praying to in the Christian sense. But the physical act, the emotional act, and the way it calms me down.
Absolutely.
But having somebody else pray for me is something that I really do believe in. And I have a friend, when I'm in trouble, I will message him and say, could you put one in for me? And he'll...
Yeah.
I do pray, though I don't pray Christian prayers. If I was to pray to your God, it wouldn't work. But if you were to pray for me to your God, it would.
Well, of course, to me, it's all the one God. You know, that's obviously where I'm coming from.
Lord Jesus Christ, meek and humble of heart, you offer to those who follow.
My prayer is my life, and my life is my prayer. It's the essence, I suppose, of the life. I'm Sister Mary. I've been here like nearly 40 years.
My interest in prayer is it being a force for the good of society that's greater than maybe going out and doing good works.
You know, Pope Francis said, prayer changes reality. It either changes the circumstances or it changes my heart. Whenever I'm alone or waiting for an office or sitting in the church, I pray for people, you know, and I feel that my prayer will somehow bring blessings on them.
All shall be well, and all shall be well, and all manner of things shall be well. All shall be well, and all shall be well, and all manner of things shall be well. All shall be well, and all shall be well, and all manner of things shall be well.
So we're climbing up a field now towards the avenue, and we can see the monastery and the back of the church where the nuns live, the guest accommodation.
I can see the appeal of the place. I can see how you come here and feel that you've found your home.
Yeah.
I don't have that same sense of rootedness because I can't afford property.
Yeah, but if you could, you probably wouldn't share it with 32 other sisters or 27.
I absolutely wouldn't. No, and that's something else, because in my own life, there is Mark, obviously. But that's it, you know, there's just the two of us and the dogs. But I mean, I could go days without talking to other people. I've been enthused about getting up for vigils, and then actually by the end of vigils, I was like, okay, I'm prayed out now. Can't listen to this anymore.
Yeah.
And I was very cold and sleepy. And I find myself thinking about how I normally spend my mornings, which is getting up in the dark and then walking out around the peninsula when as the sun's coming up with my two, they're not really little dogs, my two dogs. And they have, this time of year, I have these like lighted collars, so they're like little beacons of light. There's something kind of magic about it. They're my light source. That's the time of the day where I do, I call it prayer, but for me it's kind of like perhaps a repetition of things that are important to me or to remind myself as I go into the day. I guess I don't buy their Christian God.
Maybe to my shame, I don't know, but I've never wanted to explore within, say, Buddhism or Hinduism, and I think you're more open to those than I am. Yeah. My thoughts are, well, this is the church. This is what we have to work with.
Yes, yeah, and I do and have to some degree explored within other religions, but I guess I feel almost like a tourist when I explore other religions, whereas I do find a kind of home in the faith that I was raised in.
But this, I mean, why we're here also has been partly triggered by an artwork that you've been working on for the past few months.
Yes, absolutely. I spent the year looking at medieval art and the painting of the quote-unquote altarpiece that I made as part of this kind of collaborative archaeology project in Cork, and I seem to still be painting disembodied hands, disembodied eyes.
And these are medieval symbols?
Well, the hand of God, yeah. So much of it is Christian in its origin. Yeah, so I don't know, or maybe it's I'm getting a bit older. I'm in my 40s now. So I'm just questioning things more. I think it's also, it's been a toughish year between my mother having cancer and then the dog, the slowly dying dog. Like, I can't begin to describe what it's been like to watch something you love so much die so slowly.
And that's
just made me think more about, like, what's actually going to happen when we're not here anymore. What happens when we die? What else is there? I don't feel protected from random misfortune. And that bothers me. And I can't protect myself or my loved ones from random misfortune. And I don't think that there's anything I can ask that will, you know, intercede on my behalf and protect me or us. But what I can do is build a certain strength of mind whereby I'm able to cope with the things that happen to me and the people and the animals that I love. And that's kind of, I think, what all religion is getting at, that sort of teaches that life is suffering and now it's just a certain strength of mind which we're able to cope with whatever faces us in life. Can I quote Annie Dillard? And this is one of my, like, little mantras.
And who is she?
She's an American nature writer. Tinker at Pilgrim Creek is probably her best-known book. Every day is a god, each day is a god, and holiness holds forth in time. Which I think of because, you know, it is this idea that, you know, every day is unique and is, you know, precious in some way. And God is not singular to me. To me, it is itself the universe.
You recently introduced me to an artist and a friend of yours, Bernadette Cotter, who lives in Ballingeyring, County Cork. And we took a drive to her house one day to see her work and talk about some of these themes. But why were you curious to make her part of the program?
Well, like, if I've had spiritual teachers in my life, they've probably been people like Bernadette, artists older than me, I guess, artists, writers, you know. The way she works, more than anything, is very focused, very prayer-like. And she herself describes her work as being influenced by religion.
This is Kilmore, Ballingeyry, on Chilvor, the big wood. This is where I grew up, just down the hill there where you saw my brother's house. I cover that in handkerchiefs. I was collecting handkerchiefs for years. I don't know quite why. And then one day in April, it was probably about a year or more after my mother died. It was a beautiful sunny day in April, and I pulled out all the hankies and I started putting them on the wall outside, the wall of the house, as if the house was crying for her. And there was a neighbour up the road here who would go down to the pub every Saturday afternoon. And he went down and I could see him turning his head to look at the house. And when he went to the village, he was asking my brother, "Are you tiling the house or what?" And Funi, my brother, didn't know what he was saying. And when he was going home, they had all been taken off the house. So he didn't know what had happened. I thought that was very funny. I heard about that afterwards.
You just make it sound so easy.
Well, we just did it in a day, you know, with some sellotape, and that was it.
Will we go up and have a look?
This is your studio.
This is it. Normally, everything here is covered because I can only focus on one thing at a time. Because if there's anything in my line of vision, you know, I have to get it out of my way. So when my mother died, we kept all her mass cards. And then after some time, maybe a year or two later, I decided I'd make paper boats from each one. So I made a whole series. Each boat is a mass card. All of these are my mother's mass cards. And then these were displayed on a low table covered with white cloth. And along with this piece, I stand in a garment. The garment is white. My head is covered with a hood of white cloth. And where my face is a mirror. So if you were to look at my face in this piece, you would see yourself. on this now are words that have to do with loss and grief. Lonely or covrone, prayerful, sympathy. These are words that might have been in the mass cards as well. Some of them are in Irish. Dúirce.
Dúirce sounds like a great word.
It is. It's sort of, you know, dark. You would go dark down into yourself, which sometimes you kind of do in your work anyway. Sometimes you just can't work because you've gone down into the darkness. Mm-hmm. And there you have to stay until it's time to come back out. But you have to trust. Sometimes you don't. Sometimes I don't. Trust that I will come back out of it, because when you're in the darkness, there is no light. You just have to wait and trust that you will come back out. Because sometimes when I'm working here, I think, is this of any value? Wouldn't I be better now if I was teaching? At least there I would be doing something of value. But then ultimately I feel like what I am doing is of value.
It reminds me of the nuns in Glencairn, that for them, prayer is as powerful and as useful a force in the world as charitable works. Mm-hmm. Or more even.
More important. Yeah. More important, ultimately more important. But there are times when I doubt myself in that, because I have asked myself that question many times, you know, because I've come across doctors, for example, in my life, and they do such good work and help so many people, keeping them alive, and they're such valuable work. And I say to myself, what am I doing here, putting down all these dots? And but when you say, Sarah, that it's a prayer and that is important, that makes sense of it.
It's a much more intricate way of helping people, but it's just as valid in the same way that the prayer for the nuns is, you know. I think of work like yours that has been so useful to me. You know, I've really needed that kind of work over the years in order to find my own way or just learn how to live, do you know? Mm-hmm. These kind of, I guess, spiritual questions, this sort of meaning that I'm looking for now in my 40s. I'm going to you for the answers. No pressure, Bernadette. I have to look to lives that are sort of models of the kind of life that I'm trying to live.
Sister Angela is outside with Tashka. We're going walkies.
Yes. Oh, hello. Hello. And you're a collie. You are. She's actually a bit like Stevie. I have a collie cross and like a sheepdog. Yes, hello.
She knows everyone.
Come on, we're going for a walk.
But part of the old castle, as far as I know, and this is the old castle wall, it's called the Bawn Wall. There is a castle here, and that wall is very precious.
How many acres are there?
200 acres, as far as I know.
This is the old, or this is the new building there behind.
Yeah, that's the new building, and there's solar panels there on the top.
Oh, yeah, wow.
That's the new
dormitory block. It's not a dormitory now, we have our own
rooms.
You
have your own rooms, too.
It looks very nice, very modern.
It is, yeah, it's very modern. It's very comfortable.
Does Tashka live in the dormitories, or does she?
No, she has her own little shed outside.
Oh, okay.
She doesn't come in. She's an outdoors dog.
She's such a nice dog. You have a great life, don't you? You're lovely. You're like licking me in the mouth. Even like my two, they wouldn't come up and say hello to a stranger like at all.
She says hello to
She's
anyone,
so
and she would go with anyone as well.
Oh my goodness, look at this. The landscape is just changed from open pasture and farmland and stables into
in this, it's beautiful like all year round, really, but there's bluebells in the springtime. You know, you get those carpets of bluebells when you look in, it's just all blue.
Yeah,
it's beautiful.
Do you hear long-tailed tits?
Behind our refectory where we eat, I often see them there. They're just so hard to see. They're so fast as well.
Yeah, but you do kind of see the tails.
Yeah.
So you know
once
if it's
you see one,
small
you kind
and
of see a few more of them.
So do you have times in the day when you're, you know, free to come and walk in the woods?
After dinner, we have what's called meridian. It's not a work period, so it's That's the time you could come to the woods until after dinner, until noon, which is 3:15. Yes. Dinner is at 1 and then supper is at about quarter past five. Mm. So it's not so easy to get time, like, but you can make it.
Both Sarah and I are people who like to spend a lot of time on our own, like alone.
Mm.
So in a community of women, of nuns, and there's almost 30 of you, isn't there? Do you get to spend much time alone, or do you need that?
Oh, we do. Yeah, that's part of our life, is solitude. From after Compline at night until after Mass is called the Great Silence. So we wouldn't speak during that time unless it's absolutely necessary. We spend that time reading scripture, Lectio Divina, it's prayerful reading of the scriptures, or reading a spiritual book. And it's also time you could go for a walk. But because we don't speak during that time, you know, there's a certain solitude about that, even though we're with each other. And that's why we do so early in the morning, because of that, at least at that time in the morning, there's some chance that your mind might be a bit quiet. Like, it's a huge part of our life.
Everybody finds their own spot in the church. Some sisters like to kneel, some like to be up near the tabernacle. And we switch out all the lights except the light over the tabernacle, because that's our focus. And there, people pray in silence. And then we all sit down to sacred reading. There's some word in what you're reading that triggers something. And that becomes almost like a mantra you carry for the day. And we're responding to it in our minds and in our hearts. And there are days when you are almost bored, silly by the routine. But at the same time, there's always this recognition that it frees us too. So one of my great joys, believe it or not, is weeding. The satisfaction of actually not having to even think about it. That what I'm doing is freeing my mind. So my prayer, as I'm kneeling outside at that flower bed weeding, I'm actually reveling in it, because me and God are having a great conversation.
No, that makes so much sense to me, because I kind of have two careers as a writer, which, you know, is an intellectual practice. And when I'm writing, it reminded me somewhat of what you were talking about when you were talking about the study of the scripture. It's me thinking about every word and trying to put words together in a way that, you know, is new or that says what I want it to mean. But then I also spend an awful lot of time crafting. And so that would be like, God, I've spent so many hours this year sewing. And when I'm doing that, I'm often frustrated that I'm not really using my mind or, you know, engaging. I'm kind of, it's sort of a waste of my intellectual powers in a way. But then when I really think about it, just exactly what you were describing there, there's some other kind of peace that you tune into, or your mind is actually perhaps doing something more interesting or more important, because it's not trying, it's a different kind of conversation.
Absolutely. And that's what I say to people about my prayer. When I'm standing in my choir stall, my prayer is of a different form. And when I'm outside in creation, I'm not worrying about anything else.
In the beginning was the Word. But it's what happens between the words I'm interested in that silence. My name is Danny McCarthy. I'm a sound and visual artist based in Middleton, County Cork. And I've been coming to Glencairn for years. Recently, I brought out a CD called Haunted by Silence, which was inspired by the church and the sounds that occur in the church in Glencairn. It's a place that one feels at peace with the silence, the quietness here. And I just came across the sound by sitting in the church in the darkness. And these sounds started appearing out of nowhere and totally random around the church, and you couldn't tell where they were coming from. I've been listening to them in total darkness except for the sanctuary lamp lighting and no one else in the place with me. Eventually it kind of dawned on me what was causing the sound and where they were coming from. And it was basically the wood contracting after the heating system being turned off at 7 o'clock in the evening. If I'm sitting there 7:15, you have these pops and clicks and whatever coming from anywhere and everywhere within the church. And I've regarded it as the best sound installation I ever heard.
When I listened to Haunted by Silence, I was cooking, and it made me listen not only to the piece itself, you know, but to everything else that was going on that I didn't even want to listen to, but it suddenly made me realise how loud the space that I was in was. It just made me think your work, without giving that instruction, really forced me to listen.
That's wonderful. That's exactly the way I want people to listen to the CD. You know, you put the CD on, you carry on with your normal course of life, and the CD then will attract you back into listening and things like that. I mean, a friend of mine, he put on the CD and he thought it wasn't working. He thought it was broken. So he turned up the volume on his CD player, and next thing, this big loud pop came and he got an awful fright, nearly. You know.
The nuns talk about the great silence, and I was sort of, you know, thoughtlessly went, oh, but I mean, I'm silent for that long. I'm perhaps in solitude for as many hours a day as the nuns are, or not speaking to someone. So, like, it didn't seem that remarkable. But then when we started to tease it out, I realised that I'm actually rarely ever in silence. I'm always playing something, whether it's the radio, or if there's nothing on the radio, I'll put on a podcast, or I'll put on music, or I'm nearly always on the run from silence. And it's so easy now because of smartphones. But it's also perhaps a mind thing. It's like, I don't want to listen to my own worries. So it's easier to block it out with some kind of storyline that you can engage your brain in. But and it's also, I think, because I do quite a lot of monotonous work. I don't do it so much when I'm writing, but when I'm crafting something, when I'm sewing or painting or something, I'm pretty much always tuning out.
The important thing with listening is to actually do it. It's only through doing it that you'll discover it, and it's only through doing it that you'll discover silences. Most of the sisters here wouldn't hear the noises that I would hear in the church when the wood is contracting and that kind of thing, but I would be very consciously listening to that. Like, I mean, that would be part of my practice, you know?
Every day is a god, each day is a god, and holiness holds forth in time. I worship each god, I praise each day, splintered down and wrapped in time like a husk of many colors spreading, at dawn fast over the mountains split.
Just up here, past the church, there's a flock of sheep. And I've been trying to get them to talk to me, but I think they've taken a vow of silence. Well? Any word from you? Unfortunately, their disdainful glare can't be recorded on the radio.
They're honestly just looking, rolling their eyes at me like I'm insane.
They're rolling their eyes. And thinking about your writing, you could draw some associations with Seven Steeples and the quest that we're on now here.
Yeah, like Seven Steeples sort of evolved into a Christian allegory without me expecting it to. Like there's this structure of the mountain, and the mountain has all of this eyes, so it's essentially a kind of godlike figure. And the language is like somewhat scriptural. And then there are these little motifs, like the couple who live in this isolated place, in this isolated house, find an Elrond figure on the beach, which is a plastic figurine of a character in Lord of the Rings, and they build a shrine about it. And they do all of these little things that are essentially sort of blessings or observances, but are completely secular, you know, they're just part of daily life. So, you know, it's something that's been going around in my head for a long time.
Yeah.
It's funny, with Seven Steeples, I didn't labour the point of it being religious, because I don't feel like it. I feel it's sort of a taboo, that people recoil from you talking too much about, especially the Catholic Church, after everything that's happened in recent years. The people here are really good. Like, I really feel that. And, you know, if you could just take all of the poisonous aspect out of religion, or the institutions of religion, it would be so much of a better society, you know, if these were the people who, if these were all of the people and not just this very small community.
Lord, when night is
deep with its shadows. Oh, let's go, let's drift away. May your word, a lamp in darkness, shine for us till dawning day. Lord, when night is long with its suffering, filled with dread of one more day, may your coming heartening presence comfort all the wait and pray.
Oh, we are going out, yes, okay.
If you want to.
Or yeah, no, quick, guys.
We're going to follow you, but where are you taking us?
Okay, well, it's up to you, because we can go to the sheep, first of all, or we can head to the garden,
let's
if you want to
there.
See
let's
it.
Let's see the garden, because we've only seen the sheep, have we?
Oh, I tried to get the sheep to talk to me earlier. Let's hope that we don't get rained on.
My name is Sister Laura. I've been here 3.5 years. I'm a first-year junior. So that means I've taken my temporary vows and I'm going to renew them now every year until I make my final profession if I continue along this path. I remember the first time I studied Heidegger, German existentialist philosopher, and his big thing is like living authentically. And Heidegger used to say, in order to be an awakened person, to be awake in your life, you need to live with the awareness that someday I will die. Not to get too heavy, yeah. But if you live with that awareness, then how are you going to spend your life? What really matters, or what does it mean to be human? What does it mean to live an awakened life? And I just loved these questions in college.
One of the things that I repeat to myself is 5 remembrances. This is from Buddhism. And they go, I am subject to aging. There's no way to avoid aging. I'm subject to ill health. There's no way to avoid ill health. I'm subject to dying. There's no way to avoid death. Everyone and everything that I love will change. There's no way to escape being separated from them. And then it goes, my only true possessions are my actions. I cannot escape their consequences. And it's depressing. Oh. But to me, that's really powerful because every day it reminds me that I'm going to age and get ill and die and all of my loved ones are. And I should, you know,
be grateful for what you have and then remember what matters.
Like, yes.
Have yeah. perspective. Let me just get a key. This is our garden.
It's like the secret garden. We just went through a kind of a green door in the middle of a wall. We came in under an arch, yes. And we're in a walled garden.
And I think there's a rainbow in the sky. See that?
Oh, no.
During the summertime, all our fruit and a lot of our vegetables is grown here, which is great. You know, we work with our hands. We live by the work we do with our hands. There's something kind of elemental about this life. And
the kind of freedom from technology as well.
There is, yes. Yeah, definitely freedom from technology.
As Sarah takes a photograph with her
smartphone.
Phone. It's true.
What do you get out of the Psalms or, you know, the religious texts? There's a lot of, like, praise the Lord is the best thing. To me, it's not beautiful writing, I suppose.
When we sing the Psalms, I think of them as they're, like, coming through us, that we're almost conduits of these prayer is coming through us and going up to God. Like, this is much bigger than me. This is almost a cosmic thing as well that's happening. Because there's different types of psalms. So there's psalms of lament and there's psalms that are really, really dark. And there's even kind of violent language in them. And I think they're sort of a mirror of your own heart too, of these difficult, awkward, complicated emotions we sometimes feel and can't look at.
And I completely immediately understand what you mean, because actually when I was given the words and I was trying to read the word and being a literary critic, that ruined it for me. But actually just listening to you, watching you, you know, stand and bow and it's actually about creating a kind of a holy noise.
Yeah, that's a lovely way to put it. A holy noise. And the body is really important in it too. Like the profound bow and how it's a real, it's something embodied too. That it's not just kind of our heads or it's not just singing, that it's a full bodied movement. And I think monastic life is deeply transformative over time, actually. But it can feel very monotonous as well, you know. It's a slow life in a way. It takes a lot of patience, especially with yourself.
But it's so interesting to hear you speak, because I think there's this kind of perception, and it perhaps would have been partly my perception, that people who enter religious orders have kind of not thought that much about it, or just like, okay, here's a way of like sorting out my bills for the rest of, don't have
skipping.
To pay rent anymore.
Yes,
yeah.
Yes.
Or hiding in a way from the world. Whereas in fact, I realized that you're actually maybe the people in society who've really, really thought about it and really searched for something.
Yeah, it's definitely not an escape. But yeah, I think my family thought that too. There was very much this idea that you're just running away from, you know, life or problems, but no. Mm-hmm. But it's like the total opposite. Mm-hmm. Because the first thing when you enter a monastery that you have to confront is yourself, really. And because it's a life of silence and like quite a bit of solitude, which can be disconcerting at first, really, especially the silence, mm-hmm. really disconcerting. Everything comes up and you meet yourself in such a deep way, mm-hmm. and you meet the shadow, as Jung would say, and there's like not that many distractions. So you kind of have to face all that as well. And then in the process, you kind of really discover your light, you know, that deep inner light that we all have, and that like goodness and beauty. And this is, the monastery is like a microcosm of the world too. Like all the difficulties and the problems and the personalities out there are in here too.
Because I do feel like, you know, you all talk about sort of silence and solitude, but actually I've seen like way more people here over the last couple of days than I'd see in my daily life.
You're so right. And this is actually something I was really kind of wrestling with quite recently, because we do a lot of things communally. So we eat together, we pray together. As you guys have seen, we're with each other a lot. I think that's why the silence, first of all, is so important. That guards our solitude a bit. But also what I'm coming to realise about Cistercian solitude is it's really like solitude of the heart, which I think is almost a deeper level. So it's kind of being with others, but still somehow being centred in yourself, in your own heart. You know, that you're there with God somehow. And you do need a certain amount of external solitude too, but it's kind of a more interior thing.
Okay, it's lashing to get out of here.
Attention is the rarest and purest form of generosity.
Attention is the rarest
absolutely
and purest form
attention
of generosity.
Attention is
the rarest and purest
form
of generosity.
Attention is prayer.
Absolutely unmixed attention is prayer.
So I think the mystical aspect of it is of interest to me because of the mystery of art. Mm-hmm. Like, why do we choose certain shapes or colours at the simplest level, or certain topics? Or I think so many artists would say that they feel sort of drawn or driven to create certain things for reasons that they really don't understand. And to me, that's very similar to religious life, mm-hmm. or that. And quite a few
inspired,
people here.
Kind of inspired and spirit-led.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. There's mystery at every level, really, isn't there? The mystery of the Eucharist, Christ present in the community, Christ present in the guest or the sick, Christ in the stranger. And God is mystery. You know, no matter how far we can go, we never fully comprehend who God is. I think mystery is about seeing the invisible in the visible.
A word is dead when it is said. Some say, I say, it begins to live that day.
There's one, two, three, four of them. And then that's the end. I stop where the poems end. They're all the poems of Emily Dickinson.
They're huge circles.
Slightly more than a metre, I would say. Empty in the centre. 3 inches of an empty space in the centre. The drawings are red.
So when you say drawings, you're actually talking about kind of writing. I mean, I would say calligraphy.
It is writing. So as I'm writing them, I'm saying them, you know, in my mind.
Rather than chanting a mantra, you're kind of drawing a mantra.
Yeah, exactly. I would say that, yeah. A word is dead
when it is said. Some say, I say, it begins to live that day. When you say a word, it lives. Art is exactly the same, because I do think that the art, it doesn't live until it's seen by other people. That's when it comes to life.
Do you hear silence in your work when you look at your work?
Oh, I do. Really? Oh, absolutely. I absolutely do. That's what I ultimately see. And I see it only when the pieces, because I make installation work mostly. I do drawings as well. But the installations, I can never know what they're like until I set them up somewhere. And that's always the feeling I get from them. It's almost like there's nothing there. And I just, it's just for a brief moment that I get that feeling. And I love that.
You're very open about there being a sense of mystery in your work, that you don't know where it came from. You just felt strongly that that was the right way to do it.
It's like all the noise is gone. All the work is gone. You know? It just, and then it just becomes itself. It becomes something else altogether. Way bigger than I am.
Yeah, and that's so spiritual, really. Mm. This, some kind of divine intervention that takes the thing away from you and all your silent hours and just manifests it.
Exactly. I very often I have absolutely no idea whatsoever what I'm doing, but I do it anyway. There's a story about this man who follows the ball of thread. Wherever the ball of yarn goes, he follows it.
There's a thread you follow. It goes among things that change, but it doesn't change. The Way It Is by William Stafford.
I don't need to know where I'm going. I don't need to know what I'm doing. The art knows more than I do, so I have to follow it. It takes me where it needs to go.
The thread was maybe God's hand, in a sense. People wonder about what you are pursuing. You have to explain about the thread. But it is hard for others to see. While you hold it, you can't get lost.
You know, sometimes I lose my way or I can't see what I need to do, but usually I have a very strong feeling about whatever it is I'm doing.
And I think that line, you have to explain about the thread, but it's hard for others to see, I think that can be very relevant maybe in today's climate. Anyone at any kind of a crossroads in your life when you need to make a decision, I think this poem is helpful.
Sarah, do you need coffee or anything before we go?
Are
you sure? Are you packing?
I'm packing.
How do you feel about going out into the real world?
Well, you know, I've been thinking a lot about a poem that I studied years ago for my Leaving Cert, Seamus Heaney, and it's Lightning's Eight. That's always stayed in my head and perhaps is what's, you know, sort of led me to this idea that monasteries are apart from the world and that most of us wouldn't survive here for very long and need to be deposited back into reality. The annals say, when the monks of Clonmacnoise were all at prayers inside the oratory, a ship appeared above them in the air. The anchor dragged along behind so deep, it hooked itself into the altar rails. And then, as the big hull rocked to a standstill, a crewman shinned and grappled down the rope and struggled to release it, but in vain. This man can't bear our life here and will drown, the abbot said, unless we help him. So they did. The freed ship sailed, and the man climbed back out of the marvelous as he had known it.
Thank you.
things were getting very rough in the outside world, though, when I entered those horrible scandals. The church was being vilified. I can even remember somebody saying to me in astonishment when I said I was going to enter here, saying, what would make you join up with an outfit like that? You know, that's how negative it all was. And I can just remember standing in the choir stalls one day, singing with my sisters. We all bowed for a doxology as we sang. And I thought, isn't this fabulous? The freedom of being surrounded by other people, and we're praying together. We're lifting it all up to him. Somehow we strengthen one another, but it's also an uplifting of everything we are praying for. And of course there's, you know, 27 sisters, there's an awful lot to pray for.
Out of the Marvellous was presented by Sarah Baum and Regan Hutchins, with additional sound mixing by Tin Pot Productions. The programme was a Regan Hutchins production for RTE Lyric FM, made with funding from your television licence fee.
The series producer is Owen O'Kelly, and the production coordinator is Michael O'Kane.
The Lyric feature is available to listen to or to podcast from various well-known podcast platforms, and also from the RTE radio app, and of course the Lyric feature's own webpage, which you'll find on the RTE website. You can contact the programme with your comments or observations, features.lyricfm@rte.ie. Next week is the beginning of Seachtain na Gaeilge, and we don't want to be left out, so we're going to have an Irish flavour to our broadcast for the next few weeks, starting next Sunday, when we'll have the first of two programmes which bring us the fruits of a project initiated by folklorist Rianach E. O'Goin in 2023 and supported by the Irish Traditional Music Archive. The project revisits the Irish Folklore Commission's collection of tunes and songs which were transcribed by Seamus Ennis in Connemara and Donegal, and brings them new life through performances by contemporary Irish traditional musicians. That's A Living Voice, Connemara, next Sunday on the Lyric feature at 6 p.m.